Well, I'm going to be referring you to something that I was saying to the church at North Bradley a couple of weeks ago, really, because in the run-up to Easter, I had the idea entered into my head that I'd look at the way that the phrase, the cross, emerges in Scripture, because you know it's not there in the Old Testament. It's there buried, isn't it? It's there in form, it's there in shadow, but the actual expression is something that appears in the New Testament. It's very late. If you take your Bible, it's late in the book that the cross appears. And even then, when you start reading the Gospel, it doesn't appear quite how you think it's going to appear, and it doesn't appear as early as you imagine it's going to appear because of how much we make of the cross. And we must make of the cross. We have to make of the cross. It is the centre, isn't it? And yet it sort of appears quite late. And so I had my eyes really quite opened as I looked into this. In Matthew chapter 10, verse 38, I've read you Matthew 10 because I want to refer to this one verse in particular. This is the first time the cross appears in Scripture, the first time God, as He inspires His Word, puts this little two words together, the cross, the third time He puts it in the book for you and me to read. Do you remember the first time you read the Bible? Do you remember the first time you read the Gospel? And that maybe you didn't know this, know it all. And you came across it as it unfurls, it unfolds, the story unfolds. And this is the first time that the word the cross. And it comes from Jesus' lips. Jesus is the first person to talk about the cross. No surprises. But what surprises me, or what surprised me, is that when he starts talking about the cross, it's not his cross that he's talking about, actually. It's yours. It's mine. That took me by surprise somewhat. Matthew 10:38, whoever does not take up their cross and follow me is not worthy of me. The first time we hear about the cross, he's talking about you. He's talking about me. He's talking about people who want to follow him, disciples, people who are drawn to Jesus, people who are attracted to him for whatever reason, people who have come to him, heard him. And I was when I started to prepare for this, it's kind of, preacher's work is quite a strange work, perhaps this is common with a lot of you Christians. You know, you find yourself looking things up and interested in things that other people perhaps wouldn't naturally gravitate towards for obvious reasons. And I found myself looking under the word crucifixion. Under ordinary circumstances, that would be quite a perverse thing to be spending time researching and looking into, really, wouldn't it? But it's the most important, it's so important. And I found an article, on crucifixion. And gruesome reading. It's so easy to become gratuitous about the cross. You know, the Bible isn't gratuitous about it. It doesn't give us a, you know, does it? I think the film that came out was very gratuitous. The Bible's actually very restrained because the people who witnessed these things knew him and loved him. You just can't talk like that about these things gratuitously when it's real to you, when it's your experience. But I wanted to think a little bit more about it, and as I was reading this article, I came across something in this article that shocked the living daylights out of me, and it haunts me even now as I'm speaking to you. And this is weeks ago, and it's still haunting me now. In this article, the last thing I expected to see in an article on crucifixion was a photograph. You see, well, that might be surprising. I don't know, maybe it wouldn't surprise you, but it surprised me because I think of crucifixion as something that happened back then. It's all shrouded in the ancient Near East and, you know, the barbarian practices of the Romans and who threw people to the lions and all that sort of thing. But there's a photograph. Something that took place in the age of the camera. And I was just shocked. Absolutely shocked. You know what it's like. Anybody here would confess to rubbernecking at a car accident. You mustn't. You know this is not there for your entertainment. And yet there's something just draws you, like your eye just, you know, You want to see. And it was like that, looking at this photograph, I was in equal force, revolted and repulsed, at the same time as being fascinated and drawn to look and to behold the cross. What it is. Let me tell you, it is vile. The cross is vile. It's terrible. It is dreadful and awful. A crucified person is a despised person, a hated person, an utterly rejected person, a condemned, you know, we can't say that. We have a society that likes to condemn, but usually it's sort of in broadsheet form, isn't it, really? This is condemnation. This is an entire society and all its organs orchestrating itself in absolute, complete and utter condemnation, not just of the act, but the person, and subjecting them to the worst possible experience imaginable. That's the cross. That's the cross. And you know, Whitfield and people like that, they used to talk about the desire. They wanted to stand up in their pulpits and they wanted to preach a felt Christ. Not a thought about Christ. Not a considered Christ. A felt Christ. A real flesh and blood Christ on a real cross, really dying, really suffering rejection for you and for me. And that's what brought the tears to their eyes. That's what brought their joy and laughter. Because it's real. It's not a story. And you come to Matthew chapter 10, verse 38, and Jesus starts talking about the cross. And perhaps we can take some of that, most of what I've just been saying, most of it you've been thinking about Jesus, maybe, and what he's done for you. He says, you've got to take up your cross. I've got to take up mine. This is a word, this is a solemn word. This is a strong word. This is not tokenism. This is not token religion. This is an absolute, complete consecration and dedication of your entire soul. Mind, body and soul. All of you. Christ requires all of you. Everything. Everything you've got. You've got to give him absolutely everything. Give him the lot. That's the call. That's the call. Yeah, this is... When we talk about taking up our cross, I mean, you'll be familiar with this. I've done it myself, probably, in an ignorant moment, one of my many. You know, I've talked about some minor difficulty I'm experiencing. Oh, I've got to take up our cross. Carry our cross. Don't we? Oh, that ache. We've all got our cross to bear. The bills, you know. It's not like that at all. Not like that at all. This isn't a metaphor. He means it. He means it. He's not using a metaphor here. He's talking about crosses. He's talking about crucifixion. He's talking about you and me taking up our crosses. That's what he's saying to his disciples. You know, he says it here to his disciples as they're going out on a missionary journey. He says it again to the whole crowd. He says it to everybody. He repeats it several times through the course of the gospel. It's always to us, to disciples, take up your cross. And he's saying it to everybody. It's a universal statute. It's on the statute books of Christianity to you and to me. It's the entry point for following. And some people think, you know, this is a worst case scenario thing. Following Jesus could, if you're so unfortunate as to be born in North Korea and have a Bible placed in your hand and believe in it, it might actually end up in you being significantly persecuted, and at the end result of that, you may even lose your life in a labour camp, and of course that's happening to many people, isn't it? But it isn't just worst case scenario, this might happen. He's not just saying, you know, just bear in mind, if you follow me, this could happen to you. Count the cost. Of course, that is part of it. No, it's not just worst case scenario. He's saying you must accept the absolute complete condemnation of the world upon the way you are about to begin living your life. You accept the rejection and the hatred of the world. You turn from the world, the whole world, and follow me. See, once you've done that, I mean, remember, you know, the Passover. I think it's Passover tomorrow, isn't it, or something like that. It's being celebrated at the moment, the Passover. You know, they were called to go out, weren't they, to leave Egypt, to go, to turn their backs and leave on the whole thing, on the whole lot, and be hated and rejected and hunted, and to go out into the wilderness to go and worship. Now, when we go and follow Jesus, that's what we've been called to do, isn't it? To come and worship. To worship God, to know God. You're being invited to know God. To have fellowship with God. But you've got to turn your back and you've got to leave. You've got to give up your old life. You need a new life. So, let me just touch on four headings here. I'll deal with them quite briefly. I'll be as merciful to you as I possibly can be, honestly. I wish you, none of you, any harm, only good this morning, let me assure you. Four basic motives. Why? Why? We've got to take up our crosses. I know some of you are carrying your crosses. You are. I know you are. And there are times where we put them down and all these sort of things. I just want to encourage you. And maybe if you've never done this for the first time, you've never started to follow Jesus. Today's good. Today's really good. Firstly, because you deserve the cross. It's yours. It's yours. Jesus says, take up your cross. It's got your name on it. So pick up your stuff. And take it. Take responsibility for your stuff. And carry it with you. Don't leave it to somebody else. Don't leave your mess. Pick up your cross and carry it. And the second thing I'm going to touch on briefly is that look who it is that's given it to you. Look who's told you to do it. It's Jesus. Can you trust him? Is there anybody like Jesus? So he's giving it to you. So take it up. And thirdly, you know, we haven't got one of these leaders that very conveniently sits on a hill quite far back from the battle and sits there and watches us all getting slaughtered in the battlefield. He's gone before us. Jesus took up his cross. So imitate him. Follow him. Do what he does. That seems pretty sensible for Christians, doesn't it? To do what Jesus does. Yes? And there are incentives, fourthly, as well. There are incentives. There are real, proper motivations for us to do this. Good reasons. Things to avoid. If you'll take up your cross, you can avoid things, let me tell you, you don't want. And you can have things, let me tell you, that are worth having. So let me just touch on these. Can you bear with me? Yes? I'll give you one and then you can walk out after that one if you like, and I'll keep going and see who's left at the end. First, it's your cross. It's your cross. Now, clearly this photograph I saw, somebody at that time, this was in pre-war Japan, pre-Second World War Japan, obviously thought this chap deserved that cross. He deserved his cross. The Romans obviously thought lots of people deserved their cross. They should nail them up, thousands of them, on the Appine Road onto the outskirts of Rome. Lots of people through history have thought that people deserved to be crucified for various different reasons, to assert their power over their lives and to condemn their actions, their insubordinations, and so on and so forth. So there's something mobbish about it, isn't there? Sort of grabbing hold of somebody and richly humiliating them and causing them to suffer in terrible ways that we've kind of moved on from somewhat, thankfully. Or so it seems, but quite clearly there are people even today on the statute books of the in Iran. You can still be crucified legally. The government has passed laws. You can still be crucified in Iran under certain... And the things that you have to do to get crucified in Iran are pretty heinous. They are pretty heinous. People could argue that's a good way of keeping everybody in line. That's what the Romans did. That's how they kept the peace of a huge empire. They just crucified people and kept everybody terrified. Maybe we could do a bit more law and order. Bring back the cross. Do you think I'd get voted in on that one? I'm not sure. But who here thinks they deserve the cross? I mean, it's one thing to think that maybe, possibly, somebody at some time might have deserved actually to be crucified. Did anybody here actually woke up this morning and think, I really deserve to be crucified? I really do. I don't think so. I don't think so. But let me just put something to you here. What we preach is that the rejection of the gospel, the reason the gospel must be preached, the forgiveness of sin must be preached, is because we have sinned. We have rejected God's commandments, his ways, his word, his law, and so on and so forth. And in rejecting his ways and his word, we have rejected him. And what is the penalty for rejecting God? What is the natural consequence of rejecting God? It's hell. Isn't it? I mean, heaven is where God is, where everything's perfect. There's no sin. And if you're not there, where is all the sin and the rest of it? And the pain and the suffering and the misery, where's that all concentrated? It's hell. And our rejection of God, our sin, consigns us to hell, which is eternal misery and suffering. And if it weren't for Christ dying for you, every single person on the face of the earth would go to hell because we have all sinned and fallen short of the glory of God, have we not? Do we deserve hell, if you want to put it like that? If we're not walking in perfect holiness all the days of our lives, what right have we to heaven? What place have we there? How somebody once said, how could you're more likely to put your naked foot on the face of the sun than to take your sinful soul into God's heaven? Because the moment that enters heaven, it ceases to be heaven. And he's not going to let you spoil heaven after all we've done to the planet Earth. Unless we're forgiven. So if hell, eternal suffering, is the consequence of our sin, who then thinks that maybe we might deserve to be crucified? I'll leave you to think about it. I think I can see it. I can see it. I can see that actually the logic of God, because my own mind and your own mind is so alien from God's thinking and thoughts, isn't it? In his mind, my sin separates me from God, and pain and suffering, that's the natural consequence of my life. So the cross just seems a natural extension of that. Seems quite natural to me, but maybe that doesn't convince you. Let me put you a second thing then. If you're not sure how sinful your sin really is, how holy is your Jesus? Let me ask you that. Because Jesus is the one who's told you to pick it up. To take your cross. To take responsibility for your stuff, for your sin. Pick it up. Whether you believe you're that sinful or not. Have a look at Jesus and tell me, how sinful is Jesus? What's he ever done that you can honestly say, in truth, he has sinned? Can you point to one thing, one remark, one action, one attitude that you can say is sinful? Does he depart from God's laws and ways in the smallest point at any single time? Never. Never, never, never. He is holy, holy, holy. He's God manifest on the earth. And he says, pick it up. Take your cross. So, you may not see yourself as terribly sinful, but perhaps you would at least see that Jesus is terribly holy. And if he is as holy as you believe him to be, and you believe he is the Son of God, and he says to you, take up your cross, well, take it up. There's another reason to do it. Because of who he is. Forget about who you are for a minute. Let's move on to my third one. I'm very bad on illustrations. You'll have to forgive me. I don't decorate terribly well. How about imitation then? How about imitation? This is my third point. I pointed it to you. Jesus has taken up his cross. Now, you may not see Jesus as entirely holy, and you may not see yourself as entirely sinful, but you may have a positive view of Jesus. I'm speaking, I suppose, evangelistically here, but I mean, we all get into Christians. We get a bit fuzzy on the edges of these things sometimes, don't we? You maybe think Jesus is a good teacher. We've got a lot to learn from him. He's got a lot to offer. He's a prophet, perhaps, or something like this. Wise. He who says, turn the other cheek, love your enemy. He's got something. Well, he took up his cross. If you think anything good about him, if you've got any self-consciousness yourself, how about just imitating him? If he really has something to offer, why not just do it? See, most people, they won't, because they're hanging on to their lives. We're hanging on to our lives. And he's saying you can't. Not if you want to be saved. We've got to let go. We've got to trust him. We've got to follow him. That's what being a Christian is, isn't it? The followers of the way, the followers of Jesus. Well, if you want to follow him, you're going to have to take up your cross, because he did. He does it. We must do it. Simple. Simple law of imitation. And in imitating him, you identify yourself with him too. And in that moment of identification, that fellowship of sufferings, there is fellowship with him. That's something to be desired, isn't it? That's something to want, to walk closely with him, to know what it is, to do what he does. I want to point you to this final thing before I close. And here are the incentives. He says here, whoever does not take up their cross and follow me is not worthy of me. Now, if you put that another way, if you will take up your cross and follow him, he's saying you will be worthy of him. Worthy of Jesus? There's nobody like Jesus. To be counted worthy of him, to be able to look him in the eyes, to hear the words, good and faithful servant, come up high, whatever you have, to have fellowship with him, to be counted worthy, to be called his disciple, to be known of him, known by him. He's talking about speaking to the Father in heaven about us. Advocating for our sake. Dying his death for us. Standing in our place. Giving everything for us. Everything. To be worthy of that, take up your cross. Pick it up. Start following. God has been rejected by men. That's a pretty evident, self-evident fact, isn't it? People are just making up their own religions all around the world. It's all man-made. Jesus came into the world rejected by men for the very same reason. And if you want to follow him, you're going to have to be rejected too. You're going to have to die too. We've all got to go the same way. But we're worthy of him and his heaven and his glory and his reign and his kingdom. which will have no end is yours. That's worth having. That's something the world can never give you. They've got what they've got for a little while, then it's gone. Whatever it is, their gold-plated Porsche, they can't take it with them. And finally, being worthy of Jesus, that seems to me the great incentive. But you will escape hell. You won't go to hell. You won't even taste it. You'll be free. You're saved. I mean, it just seems to me to carry a cross for a few years in this world, in the sunshine sometimes, it's not all bad. But in eternal consequence, never having to suffer again. No more tears. No more poverty. No more tears. No more crying. No more lies. No more sin and the machinations of men. None of it. Just holiness. Perfect holiness. Heaven. And all that stuff just consigned somewhere else that you will never have to see or witness or participate in again for the rest of eternity. Take up your cross. Take it up. So let me speak to you just, I'm speaking to you as an evangelist here. If you don't know Jesus this morning, pick up your cross. Follow him. Give it up. Whatever you've got is not worth it. There's something so much better. I'm speaking in the absence of your pastor, pastorally for your souls. Take up your crosses. If your arms are flagging, if you're getting weary, if you're getting tired, remember what this is all about. Pick it up. Carry it high. In short, we're being invited to embrace the very, very worst in order to obtain the very, very best. And this is the offer that comes from God Almighty himself. God is speaking to men. Are we going to pick up our crosses and follow him? I'll leave these things with you and pray that God will help you during the course of your day. The old boys used to say, how did you fare under the word today? They used to ask each other, didn't they? You see how you managed under the word. I trust that God has been good to you, given you patience and grace under his word.